Hello, listeners. As many of you know, I just returned from a visit to the United States. But it wasn't until after arranging the trip that I realized that using cellular data on my Canadian-based cell phone was nearly unaffordable. I may have even declined the invite to cross the border had I known, but being a man of my word, I carried on with my phone in airplane mode, disconnected from civilization, much like my ancestors were as they crossed the Atlantic Ocean while immigrating to Canada. Although I couldn't like and retweet as often as I like to, the vision quest I unintentionally found myself in had one massive benefit. It allowed me to reconnect with my love for beautifully written fiction. During the over 6 hour long ferry ride, I found myself swept away in a great novel, and I want to tell you about it. It's called Smile, written by the Booker Prize winning author Roddy Doyle. It tells the story of Victor Ford, who during one of life's many lows has a chance encounter with someone from his past. The troublesome part is that Victor doesn't remember him, but the odd man knows him well, and the memories he stirs up in Victor will threaten to destroy his sanity. If you want a masterfully written psychological thriller, mark September 12th in your calendar. Roddy Doyle's Smile will be waiting for you wherever great books are sold. Before you start, I will warn you, once you finish the last page, you'll reevaluate everything you think you remember about your past. If any of you pick up Smile on September 12th, I'd love to hear what you think of it. Until then, let's get to tonight's show.
You are tuned to the Nighttime Podcast.
In the beginning, when I created the Nighttime Podcast, I did so to further explore the people, places, and events that interested me, and to then share the stories with a like-minded audience. In those early days, my ambitions were modest. I never expected my audience to surpass a triple-digit figure, and certainly I didn't expect the show to bring me across an international border. But as it would turn out, I must have gained some favor with whoever is ruling from above or below, as many more of you are tuning in than I'd ever imagined. And thanks to your interest in the show, I've been afforded some amazing opportunities. Just last month, one of those opportunities brought me south of Halifax, as far as the United States. During the brief amount of time I spent in America, I was able to enjoy their freedom, sample their fast food, and view the world using the imperial unit of measure they maintain. But of all the weird and wonderful experiences I've encountered during my time in the U.S., the most unique, without any question, was meeting with the most influential Satanist of our lifetime. And much to my surprise, he was really nice. In tonight's episode, I will share portions of the live event that I, along with my pals Tim and Lance, hosted on August 18th in Somerville, Massachusetts. The portions of the event I include in this episode will feature our guest, the co-founder and spokesman for the Satanic Temple, Lucian Greaves. Before we get to this episode's content, I'll share a bit of background on how this event came to be. Several months back, I was a guest on Tim and Lance's show, Crawl Space. At some point, either before or after recording, I mentioned my summer vacation plans, which would bring me to some locations in the Boston area, most notably a visit to a Thomas the Train theme park and a stop at the Satanic Temple headquarters in Salem. How's that for contrast? Since Tim, Lance, and I would be in the same place at the same time, we decided to do a live recording in front of an audience. The problem was the clock was ticking fast, leaving us with only a month or two to prepare. But as fate would have it, everything would come together very quickly. A local theater called the Rockwell, which sits just under 200, was the first choice for a venue, mainly due to Tim and Lance's personal history performing plays there. Next was deciding our guests. We wanted to feature someone local to the area, and of course we wanted to make it someone memorable. And I knew just the guy. As I mentioned prior, my travel itinerary included a stop at the Satanic Temple in Salem. I made the suggestion to Tim and Lance that I reach out to their co-founder and spokesman, Lucian Greaves, and invite him to join us. With Lucian being such a high-profile person, we didn't expect him to agree to join us. but after I spent about an hour writing an overly formal email introducing myself and inviting him, he responded with a short and sweet message, "Sounds fun, I'm in." When he accepted, we were excited, but a little nervous. Our biggest concern initially was that he would make us look like dummies. He knows much more about religion, politics, and law than we ever will. But we didn't intend to go too far down that road. We wanted to keep the conversation light and focus on the Satanic Temple's role as a group lobbying for the separation of church and state and doing it in a creative yet very effective way. What we didn't anticipate was the strong negative reaction we would receive from a minority of our audience after announcing his involvement with the event. Some were uncomfortable hearing a speaker of a faith they felt conflicted with theirs, while others simply felt we may be putting ourselves and our listeners at risk of bodily or spiritual harm at the hands of the sort of satanic cults people feared in the 70s. Now, looking back with the events said and done and the mild controversy behind us, I couldn't have asked for a better night. The venue was beautiful, the drinks cold, and the seats full with an attentive and interested audience. And that brings us to this episode's content. As the actual event ran for just under 2 hours, this episode will feature an abbreviated version focusing specifically on Lucian's interview. The live event did include a second guest, a local blogger named the Cryptid Antiquarian, who appeared on Tim and Lance's show Crawlspace in the past. I left this portion of the event out as without a background on the Vanishing Men of Boston case and the visuals that appeared on a projector, it may sound confusing to someone uninitiated. The full unedited audio will be available to Patreon supporters on the patron-exclusive RSS feed shortly, if you're interested in hearing it all. So with that said, I'll get to the event now. We made no secret about the fact that our first guest was met with a mixed reaction when we announced him joining us. But based on the comments we received by email and Twitter messages and whatnot, it was obvious that the negative reaction was from people who had no idea who he is, what he's accomplished, or most importantly, what he stands for. And it was disappointing, as regardless of what you believe in, where you're from, or who you choose to love, he's likely done more to protect your children and your personal freedom than you likely realize. And he's done it through political change, despite the fact that he's not a politician. He's just some guy from Detroit who is creative, ballsy, super intelligent, and the best part of all, at least to me, is he done it all in the name of Satan. So I'd like to introduce Lucian Greaves, co-founder of the Satanic Temple.
I'm a little jealous that Jordan got a hug from the co-founder of the Satanic Temple. It's
Bring it in.
Yeah, and as I said, we got a mixed reaction.
Thank you.
We had of everything I've ever done as publicly, I think the most negativity I've received was when we first announced him. Although there was a lot of supporters, there was also a lot of, why would you subject your listeners to a satanic cult? Are you trying to recruit people for Satanism? We had people cancel their tickets. Although it is all true, I think there's much more to Lucian than they realize. So just to basically to open it up completely, the first thing I'd like to ask Lucian is if you could just explain the difference between what you do and what the Satanic Temple does versus what the satanic cult that keeps Tim awake at night does. So if you could just explain, you know, the difference of what you're doing versus what people are afraid of.
Because I'm terrified right now sitting next to you.
Right. Well, the mythology is that satanic cults engage in ritualistic abuse and that they have mobile crematoriums that they dispose of the bodies in. And all these other things you heard on daytime talk shows in the 80s and during the 90s. That is a very big topic and all the reasons that people believe those kinds of things can't be touched on here. But some of that still goes on today in what experts really found, law enforcement looked into these kinds of claims. They never turned out to be true. This was a large-scale moral panic, and it's a way for people to avoid their real problems, and we see that today with, like, Charlottesville. We see different pastors claiming that, and they've said this explicitly. There was a week ago about, there was a piece in the Washington Post, which I'm posting rebuttal on, in the Washington Post in the next week, written by a Baptist minister saying that white supremacy is Satanism. In fact, it has very explicit Protestant roots. The KKK is explicitly a Protestant religious sect. And Satanism often has just been a pejorative term as a way to other people and in that way justify doing horrible things against them, outcasts in the community, minority groups, whoever else. And part of what we do is we stand up for the unjustly accused and the minorities and the outcasts, and we fight for true religious liberty and pluralism. And you see a lot of that in the things the Satanic Temple does when we ask for equal religious representation, where religions are allowed in the public forum. And we've seen many public forums shut down rather than allow the Satanic Temple to speak at all. We recently saw that in Minnesota, where we offered a veterans memorial in an open forum for veterans memorials where a Christian one existed. We offered one ourselves, a very kind of sober and respectful monument, and yet it was altogether too much for the community. So it's really kind of a strain on free speech, but not one that's simply meant to harass the community, but make them think about what these issues really mean and what American principles really are of democracy and pluralism. And I think it's a lesson that is well needed today.
Okay, let me just get this out of the way real quick here, Lance. So you have never sacrificed goats, babies, nothing like that?
I didn't say any of that. But what I do on my private time is my own business, and this certainly has nothing to do with the doctrine of the Satanic Temple.
Now, you mentioned the memorial, the Veterans Memorial. This was in Minnesota in...
Veterans Memorial is now on display at our headquarters in Salem. We do have a headquarters in Salem, and it's there now because they couldn't tolerate it being on the actual property in Belle Plaine. But it's a cube. It has inverted pentagrams on it and a soldier's helmet on the top. There were size restrictions on monuments, so it needed to be fairly small. It's a very sturdy steel construction because we had to figure that there was a high potential for vandalism. But we were approved. The Belle Plaine originally approved, and they said they fully understood the ramifications of opening up the property. What people don't I need to step back further. There was originally a Christian group put a Christian cross as a veterans memorial in the park in Belle Plaine, Veterans Park. They didn't ask for approval. They didn't ask for approval from the city. They just fucking plopped it there and decided that they were marking their territory, as so many evangelicals do, declaring this a Christian nation. And then the Freedom From Religion Foundation reached out at the behest of a local who was complaining. A local in Belle Plaine was offended by this, said it was a violation of church and state to allow this to stay on the public property. So the city took it down. After they took it down, the Christians complained loudly, and a lawyer from Alliance Defending Freedom came, an evangelical litigation group came, and said that they had a rock-solid proposal to open up the Veterans Memorial Park as a free speech zone. And the idea being that anybody could put a private donation into the public park, something that would memorialize veterans, and in that way, it wasn't government speech. It was private speech, and it was open to First Amendment protection. They did that, and we called their bluff. They felt that they would be the only ones there, that nobody would have the audacity to put something, a religious monument that wasn't Christian there, and we put in our proposal, and the proposal met all the standards. The Catholic Archdiocese over in Minnesota decided that, this is classic, they decided that if the Satanic Memorial was to be there, this could lead to the molestation of local children. And we didn't know at first. We didn't know at first if this was a threat, like if they were saying that if you put this monument up, if you allow this to happen, we will molest your children. But they had this idea that it's a it's a very obvious case of projection. You know, they're denying their own sinister proclivities to claim that this is what Satanists do.
So this irks you, obviously. Putting up a monument in the name of Christianity rubs you the wrong way.
If it's government endorsement of a particular religious view, then it's problematic. If you have a Ten Commandments monument on state capitol grounds, and this is what happened in Oklahoma when we offered our Baphomet monument, and I don't know if everybody's familiar with that, but we actually...
Beautiful.
I think they're pretty familiar now.
All right, yeah, yeah. Now this is full scale. It's, what, 8.5 feet tall, 1.5 tons, and this is also now residing in Salem at our headquarters. You can go visit it.
Are we able to get our picture in front of it if we show up?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, nice. We'll do that tomorrow.
Good.
This will be a good time. But the point being was that we didn't want Baphomet alongside the Ten Commandments. We didn't want Baphomet on public grounds alone. It was there to act as a counterbalance against the Ten Commandments. It was there to demonstrate that plurality is still respected, that we live in a pluralistic nation that respects religious freedom. And in this way, we call the bluff of the evangelical theocrats who go around claiming that there's a secular message behind the Ten Commandments, or that it's not government speech because they're willing to respect other points of view that come in. Once we actually test that, we find that that's simply not the case.
Because once you had this built and were ready to install it, my understanding is they took down the Ten Commandments monument?
They took down the Ten Commandments monument, but in Oklahoma, the case was, the case went to the Supreme Court. I believe it was the ACLU litigating, and there was it was based upon the state constitution of Oklahoma, which stated that nobody within the state of Oklahoma could be made directly or indirectly to participate in, fund, or otherwise engage in somebody else's religious practice by government fiat. And the Ten Commandments monument was ruled to be in violation of that. When I did, say, the Megyn Kelly interview on Fox, she attributed the taking down of the Ten Commandments monument to our efforts to put up Baphomet. And though we can't know how much of that was a consideration for the state Supreme Court, they had to have it in mind. They had to have it in mind that whatever they were going to rule on the Ten Commandments monument was going to have ramifications for our request to put up Baphomet in Oklahoma. And I think it may have influenced their decision to say that certainly, yeah, we can't have religious monuments as government speech at all.
One story I'd love you to tell is, so as you're fighting with the governments and these, you know, these religious groups and whatnot, and I don't know if fighting is the right word, defending, you know, it's probably more appropriate. I understand you did get yourself in trouble at some point. And I was reading about the Pink Mass. Could you just tell the story of what you did and what it was in reaction to and what ended up coming of that?
Yeah, I don't think you're going to see a more contentious event in Boston until tomorrow. But but at the time, this was the Boston Marathon bombing. And this was before they knew who had done it. And Westboro Baptist Church was going to come and protest the funerals of the victims of the Boston Marathon bombing. And a lot of people showed up to counter-protest, and I was there among them, and we were waiting to see the Westboro Baptist Church show up. And everybody was infuriated. Nobody was in a good mood after the Boston Marathon bombing. It was martial law, and people were very agitated about the Westboro Baptist Church, and it was probably best that they didn't show up. But like smartasses, they took to Twitter, and they were saying, you know, you all showed up for us, and we were there in spirit, and they, you know, did some little Photoshop of their protesters hovering above the heads of the counter-protesters who were there in Boston. They're holding signs that said, God brought the bombs, and things that other things that suggested that the victims of the marathon bombing deserved it. And the important part was that they said that they were there in spirit. So this kind of got our gears turning to thinking about how we could also meet the Westboro Baptist Church on somewhat more spiritual terms, to be with them in spirit. So naturally, Fred Phelps, who since has died, was alive at the time, we looked up where his mother was buried. This is only, I'm sure this practically writes itself. You can, I'm sure you know the idea now. So anyways, we went to her gravesite and decided to have a homoerotic satanic ceremony at her gravesite, which culminated in me respectfully resting my testicles on her headstone. And we had a lot of pictures of this taken that we disseminated afterwards, and they got very angry and they got very upset. And we declared that we had turned his mother into a lesbian in the afterlife.
And let's just pull up that visual of the testicle. Yeah. I'm just kidding. We don't have it.
There are visuals online. But we wanted to also be clear that we don't advocate for views of supernaturalism. We don't believe in the supernatural. We're a non-theistic religion. But we were taking the position that we believed that they were obligated to believe, due to their beliefs, that we had turned her into a lesbian in the afterlife. That was something of a commentary on the argument they had taken all the way to the Supreme Court, that belief is inviolable. And you know, they're not subject to correction on any empirical evidence whatsoever, because that's simply their belief. So we were free to believe that they believed that she was a lesbian in the afterlife, despite whatever they might say. And they really did give us the credit of doing their famous, you know, they do those, I don't know if you've seen them, they do their flyers, and they did a whole kind of flyer with all their symbols around it with some kind of senseless, asinine ranting about how Satanists, queers, and whoever, you know, we're all one and the same, and we're all damned to hell. But it was a good time.
So the testicles, what part of in the pink mass does that, what does that mean as far as the pink mass?
That means fuck you, Fred Phelps, and fuck you, Westboro Baptist Church. I mean, if we're going to be honest about it, that's really what the message was there. That really wasn't part of the scripted event at all. I kind of went rogue on that.
That moment of inspiration.
Got caught up in the moment, and that was actually, there was kind of debate about that within my own people of whether that was a wise thing to do or not, but I certainly don't regret it. But you were asking about trouble, right? Afterwards, the police in Meridian, Mississippi, were trying to get a judge to sign off on various offenses that they thought I could be charged with. Eventually, they settled upon desecration of a grave, and the sheriff over there, I don't think he counted on kind of pushback in defense of Satanists who were protesting Westboro Baptist Church, but that's what he got, and he was becoming an item of ridicule in outlets like Huffington Post and Vice and things like that, where he was originally saying that I was going to serve prison time or whatever. He was saying, all right, this is a $500 fee at most. So I was back here in Massachusetts, and I was talking to my lawyer, and I said, well, let's go fight the charge. I'll wear horns and a cape, and we'll bring cameras, and we'll actually go to court over this. And I had said such insulting things about the sheriff, though, that I thought we should know for sure that I couldn't be detained. And when my lawyer looked it up, he said, no, you could do a year. And so we said, okay, fuck it, we're not going back to Mississippi. And now I can't go back to Mississippi. Think all the fun I've missed.
What a shame. Yeah.
Shucks. Well, we mentioned Megyn Kelly and the Fox News interview that you did, and we actually have two clips if everybody wants to see them. I don't know if anyone has seen these yet. It's Tucker Carlson interviewing Lucian and Megyn Kelly interviewing Lucian, about 4 minutes or so. But I want to point out not so much Lucian's reaction, but at Tucker Carlson's face during this whole thing is probably one of the funniest things I've ever seen. So if we can roll with that.
City, Minnesota once featured a small Christian monument. That was dangerous and offensive, of course. So there were lawsuit threats, and the city declared the monument's location a free speech zone. But that, in turn, drew the attention of a Satanist group which wanted to erect a satanic shrine in the park. Now, the city is reversing itself and decided to remove all religious symbols from the park instead. Lucian Greaves is the co-founder of the Satanic Temple, and he joins us tonight. Lucian, thanks for joining us. I don't know much about Satanism. What are the five pillars of Satanism? What is it?
We have seven tenets, actually. And actually, they're irrelevant to our claim to be allowed in the free speech zone.
Well, they're relevant to your claim to be a religion. And so I just Just give us a sense of what
actually,
it is.
Actually, us being a religion has no bearing on us having I'm aware of the free speech zone.
But you do claim to be a religion. I just want to know what it is. Is it the worship of Satan?
No, we're actually non-theistic, and modern Satanism has been recognized as non-theistic for some time now. There are actually scholars of modern Satanism. There's books about new religion that cover Satanism. But as I said, it really has no bearing on our claim to access to the free speech.
I mean, I guess the point of calling this Satanism is to horrify, like, normal people in the middle of the country. That is exactly the
point. That's not true. No, okay. No, that is not exactly
So what is the point?
Just and
sum
I will
it up
argue
for me.
That point.
I'll give you 30 seconds. What's the point of Satanism?
Well, to sum up a religious movement in its history in 30 seconds isn't quite
not the
fair,
hit,
but I would say that... But I would say that Satanism embodies Enlightenment values. It is emblematic of the ultimate rebellion against tyranny. To that end, we look at the history of the crushing of the church and the rise of Enlightenment values and the rise of pluralism and diversity and multiculturalism as inherently satanic.
Well, a group of Satanists is tonight claiming victory after a court told the state of Oklahoma to remove a monument to the Ten Commandments from the state capitol. Before the ruling, the Satanists wanted to install their own tribute, a pagan idol showing a bearded goat on the Capitol grounds, right next to the Ten Commandments. We will begin with Lucian. All right, Lucian. So is it like Lucian as in Lucifer? Is that why you're called that?
Sure, as you like.
As you like. I don't know. Like, is that your birth name?
No, it's not.
Okay. So what is it that first drew you to the Satanic Temple?
Well, I helped co-found the Satanic Temple.
Why?
Why? Because it is an embodiment of my deeply held beliefs, and I think there's a distinct need for a counterbalance against the dominant religious privilege in America today.
So now you're happy because you got the Ten Commandments taken down, but are you still pushing to have the goat with the horns and so on put up on the state capitol grounds?
No, we don't want our monument there without the Ten Commandments there. The point all along was that it would complement and contrast the Ten Commandments and reaffirm that we live in a pluralistic nation that respects diversity and religious liberty.
You have no problem with the Ten Commandments standing there next to your devil figure, right?
That's correct. So long as multiple points of view are allowed, there's nothing wrong with a religious monument being up. But that really wasn't the argument that Oklahoma was making. They were saying that it wasn't a religious monument and that the Ten Commandments monument served a secular purpose, which is outright false.
Well, the U.S. Supreme Court found that. I mean, the U.S. Supreme Court has already ruled that the Ten Commandments, that the displays not only have a religious significance, but also a historical one.
Well, you're talking a different type of issue because in Oklahoma, they were ruling by the state constitution, not the federal constitution.
I know,
so it's an entirely different issue. If you're talking Texas, it's a moot point.
It's not that different, but you're right.
No,
Texas,
it's entirely different. We're talking different constitutions.
I've looked at
we're
them both.
State constitution versus federal constitution.
I know.
So
I looked at them both.
When
then
it comes to the
courts. I practiced law for like a decade, too, so I did read them and see. A lot of similar words. Lucian, thank you. Good luck to you.
And I taught you that there was a separation between that there was a difference between the federal constitution and the state constitution.
Thank you for that.
I think when you watch that, it's all like the face on Tucker Carlson is not the face of an open mind.
It was the face of constipation. That's what I saw.
But I like when a lot of the things you do, it's a bit tongue-in-cheek, but it's also really creative and smart. I love when it backfires in their face. There was one thing I had read about the pentagram ceremony.
Oh, in Los Angeles?
Yeah, and I understand that they took a step to counter-protest you that backfired.
Sure, there was a lot of counter-protest there and a lot of ignorance, and with that comes a lot of death threats. I don't know that backfires as badly as it should. I think, I think we get a real deplorable response sometimes from people who don't suffer the proper social repercussions, but I think that'll change as time goes on and people realize what an uphill battle we have and how unjust some of the response is.
So death threats, a lot of death threats, either they're frequent?
I don't look at the emails. I don't get the calls. You can talk to Ash over there about calls that come into our headquarters. But I hear it from people who head up our chapters all the time about different emails they've gotten or different credible threats that they feel that they've received. And, you know, I mean, it comes with the territory, but it's also not very nice.
Okay, so you're from the Midwest, and now you're co-founder.
I don't like to say that. I'm really from here now.
Okay, so how long have you been in this area?
About 10 years, I think.
Okay, and you work in...
So I'm fully assimilated.
Perfect. So you work in Salem now. What brought you to Salem?
It was a lot cheaper than Cambridge or anywhere in Boston, and Salem has... Certainly, it's history regarding the witch hunts that makes it a real apt location to have a headquarters anyway. And while we were trying to do an event in Boston, a Black Mass event, which we were very clear wasn't really a Black Mass, but a reenactment of a Black Mass, what's the difference? I'm not sure. Being that we don't subscribe to supernaturalism anyways, what's the difference between playing a film like Haxan or actually having live actors? I don't know, but we were using it more as like an academic exploration for the idea of a Black Mass. And we were very clear about this when we were putting out the idea. There was massive protests from Catholics anyways. So we felt that when we opened our headquarters in Salem, at least I felt that we needed to be prepared for the worst, people with torches and pitchforks and all that. But it really didn't happen at all. I guess, you know, despite how close Salem is to Boston, the highest religious population there is Unitarian, and they don't give a shit about that kind of thing. and nobody's really given us a hassle locally yet at all. So that's one time where my expectations were not met.
Now you do a lot of work in schools and for children, and we have the after school Satan program. If you go on the website for the Satanic Temple, it's really surprising how much you do in schools and for children. There's the billboard as well for corporal punishment that says, and I think we might have that image as well. Is this an actual billboard for corporal punishment?
We have a billboard up in Texas that that promotes our Protect Children project. And what that is it offers an exemption for children in schools that have corporal punishment against the kids. And one of our tenets is that the body is inviolable, subject to one's own will alone. There's 19 states that still allow administrators to beat children in the schools. And in the community where we put the billboard, there was a case within the past 5 years where a vice principal beat some teenage girls black and blue on their asses. And he wasn't fired at all. And in fact, they had a policy where it was supposed to be a same-sex beating administered, and a male administrator wasn't supposed to beat a female student to begin with. Instead of taking punitive action against the vice principal, they retroactively changed the rules and said, okay, a male administrator can beat a girl in the school.
So now we're just talking about the minutiae of, well, we can beat kids.
Right.
But... oh, well, maybe the male administration can't beat the female students.
Right.
And I actually spent a year in Florida, my eighth grade year, and they, for anyone who doesn't know, people all know what corporal punishment is, right? Like, if you get in trouble at school, you have, at least when I was in Florida, you had the option to do detention for like 2 weeks, or you could take a paddling. You could take they would bend you over a desk, and they would paddle you based on how bad your offense was. Wow. So that still happens.
And the empirical research shows that this is not a good corrective measure. That if anything helps promote behavioral dysfunction, it's corporal punishment. This does nothing to help the child in any way. It's not a helpful tool. It's not a helpful measure. And I think what you're really coming down to is some of the fundamental culture wars of religion right here. When we get down to the very basics and we really hammer on these points with people, more often than not, maybe 100% of the time now, we're met with this spare the rod, spoil the child bullshit that comes down to biblical foundations. and that's used to justify it. And I feel like that being the case, this is very much in the purview of the religious war, and to claim exemption and privilege away from that type of thing, to claim religious privilege to keep our children from being beaten in the schools. And a lot of people warned me before we rolled out this project, a lot of people closer to me felt that it was a real mistake to not put this letter of exemption out towards the parents and say that the parents needed to accept this. And I wouldn't accept that, because I think if the parents think that they should be beaten by administrators, fuck them too. You know, it's up to the kids. The kids know, they don't want to be beaten. The kids know that their body is inviolable. At what age is it inappropriate to hit somebody as a corrective? You know, I mean, that's the big question. If somebody's arguing the benefits of corporal punishment with me, what if I were to punch them in the fucking face and say, all right, well, I'm just trying to teach you a lesson.
Right, but there are people out there, and is that how you respond to the people out there who say, listen, we're in this horrible world of political correctness now, and you know, you're going to call the cops on me if I discipline my child. And they'll defend that corporal punishment as discipline, and they're not going to learn a lesson in any other way. Have you ever had anybody approach you with that?
No. No, I don't actually get very cogent arguments in favor of corporal punishment, and I anticipated them, you know. But for the most part, we really do get people, and this is a lesson to us all, they are really citing Christian privilege to beat their kids, more so than I ever thought as being a leader of a satanic organization going against this issue. Even doing that in the outset and putting together this campaign, I didn't think we realized how religiously embedded this idea of corporal punishment as a corrective against children actually is. And I really do feel that if people were to abandon their archaic ideas of superstition, they would be more amenable to the recent cognitive research that shows just how harmful corporal punishment really is.
Anytime I've looked into something like that and your principles towards that, it's always, I think what is exactly what you said. I expected a lot of the reaction to be, it's discipline, and that's how they're going to learn. But I'm also surprised to hear that it's more embedded in this archaic religious, like, muck.
There's only two arguments we get, that it's Christian to do that, yeah, and that it worked for whoever you're arguing against. They'll say, well, my, you know, whoever used to beat my ass occasionally, and I needed that, so, and I turned out just fine. My argument against that is you did not turn out fine. You think it's okay to beat children. You're clearly not okay.
So your group is so large, and you have so many supporters. What type of people are you seeing supporting you? I understand a lot of immigrants to the country can relate to what you're protecting, as well as, you know, same-sex couples. What type of people are you hearing from supporting you?
A lot of gay, a lot of transgender, a lot of sex workers, and a lot of the disaffected overall. I think our demographics have changed through time. When we first came in to the scene, I think people were used to this kind of old black metal school of Satanism. So it was white males, mostly, you know, around, you know, from their teen years to about 30 years old. And then as it became clear where we stood on certain issues, we really had a shift towards a lot of females coming into the Satanic Temple. There was a time when well over 50% of new membership was female around college age. And then it didn't take long, especially with things like the Pink Mass, where we got a lot of the LGBTQ community. And I think that's a natural fit for them anyways. They're beat up upon by traditional religious organizations, and we're obviously a place where that's not even a question. There's not even a difference. It's not a matter of toleration. That is itself an insulting term. It's something where it's and nobody cares about that within the Satanic Temple at all. But I think now we're really reaching a spot with the Satanic Temple where we're seeing a lot of lot of people from different minority groups, a lot of people of color and that type of thing who have a better grasp of the history of the church to not feel an affinity for it in the least. And this has really been a haven for them. And I think in that way, especially with Trump being elected, we're finding a real boom in a diverse population coming to the Satanic Temple and finding kind of a cultural identity and a home.
So these are the seven tenets up here. And I was reading an article the other day about you and the temple. And the author of the article said, you know, I'm a Satanist and I didn't even realize it. Is that kind of what you find, that that people who aren't necessarily religious are actually Satanists and don't call themselves that?
Yeah, we also get those a lot of people who see that these are very straightforward, very rational kind of humanistic values. And for that reason, they don't understand why it would be Satanism. But if you understand kind of the history of modern Satanism and the Romantic literary movement and how it was building kind of a new mythological cultural backdrop for Enlightenment values, that was very satanic. That was, you know, you're coming from Western civilization being dominated by the Catholic Church to being a civilization that had to embrace pluralism and diversity. And that was very much against the kind of theocratic values, the feudalistic values put forward by the church. And so to that end, Enlightenment values in and of themselves kind of define satanic values. And you have to be able to not only discard superstition and say it's one thing to say you're a non-believer, but it's another thing to actually embrace blasphemy. And you'll be surprised at how many atheists still seem to be beholden to a kind of unconscious superstition, where these symbols and the names still seem to have an inherent value in their minds and can't be amended in any way, where what is satanic needs to be defined as the absolute evil and absolute cruelty, which also implies the opposite, that the Christian religion are the arbiters of what is morally true and correct. And I think that's what needs to be contested, and that's what needs to be challenged. And you can't do that if you can't accept the notion that different symbols can mean different things to different people in different times and different places. There's a certain semantic logic behind this, and I admit it's a major mind fuck to a lot of people. But it's a very necessary one, and I think the confusion we cause is all for the better.
I think we can open up the floor to questions. This yeah. has gone by ridiculously
really fast.
Yeah.
Can I ask Lucien a question before we open it up for questions?
You don't have to ask me permission to do that.
As you wish.
Lucien, Gray Faction, what is that?
Yeah, I reference the pushback we have against the Satanic Panic from the 80s and 90s, which the Satanic Panic never actually ended. There's still this prevalent notion of satanic cults committing crimes, and you'll see bullshit stories from the Daily Mirror and the Sun from the UK at about a weekly basis about satanic cults pulling some kind of ritual sacrifice or murder or whatever else, or these suspicions that satanic cults are guilty of all types of crimes that are taking place. And what's really troubling is that this conspiracist notion is kind of validated by this insane counterculture within licensed mental health practitioners that still primarily focus on the idea of multiple personality disorder and the idea that certain traumas are so traumatic that they can't be assimilated into the mind and are relegated to separate compartments of the mind that then branch off into separate personalities in somebody, and in that they need to do things like regressive hypnosis to draw forth these personalities to allow them to assimilate into the core personality and recall the memories that brought them into existence to begin with. And what has been found time and time again by responsible research psychologists is that when people undergo this type of therapy, they tend to confabulate memories that are not at all true, but often remarkably match the assumptions of the therapist who is doing the regression to begin with. And they come up with all kinds of bizarre narratives, including the idea that they were abused by Satanists, the idea that they were abducted by aliens, the idea that they've recalled memories of past lives. And all of this, as I said, usually matches a therapist's assumptions. And this is a very discredited idea within cognitive science and research psychology. Nonetheless, organizations like the APA, the American Psychiatric Association, have failed to confront it within their licensing boards and have allowed these kinds of delusional conspiracist therapists to run amok and really instill people with crippling delusions, paranoid delusions that will affect the rest of their lives and weigh upon them traumas that never existed. And we fight back against people who are licensed to do these types of things, people who take people who are mentally vulnerable and hurt them with this type of therapy. And we're fighting to try to get the APA to revise their standards. We're fighting against licensing boards to try to get them to revoke the licenses of people who engage in this practice. And we investigated a case not too long ago, our own original research, where we found there was a case of a woman, Gigi Jordan, in New York, a multimillionaire mother who murdered her own 8-year-old autistic child. And she murdered him on the assumption that she was saving him from a life of torture by satanic cults. And prior to murdering her kid, she had consulted with a woman, Ellen Lacter, a psychologist, a clinical psychologist in California, licensed, who on her own website talks about Illuminati conspiracy theories, talks about witchcraft abuse, satanic ritual abuse, all these kinds of 1980s, 1990s debunked conspiracy theories that we feel there's a very credible basis to say that if Gigi Jordan had consulted a non-conspiracist therapist, somebody who would have disabused her of her conspiracy theory, she might not have murdered her child. We put a petition against Ellen Lacter to have her investigated by her licensing board about a year ago, and about 9 months after we put in the petition, California sent us an unsigned letter that simply said that they looked into our claims and found no merit to them, and life carries on, and Ellen Lacter is still licensed. I feel somebody like Ellen Lacter should have her license revoked simply by merit of the public statement she makes about conspiracy theories that are easily disproven by anybody who has any general grasp of reality. Anyways, that's what Gray Faction is, and that's what Gray Faction does, and it's one of the most important things that the Satanic Temple does, and it gets so little media attention because it's such a large topic. You know, a lot of the media likes to cover us when it can be summarized in the headline, and we do get a lot of that. Gray Faction is so much more complex, and it really deserves a lot of attention, so if you have the time and you have the inclination, look at grayfaction.org. That's very important to us, and if you think you can be any help to it, there's contact information on that site.
Excellent.
Thank you very much for asking about that.
Yeah, of course. If anyone's got any questions, please, there's a mic right here. We've got maybe 15 minutes or so left before anyone asks one, or as someone's making their way there. I just want to ask about, sort of bring up the Charlottesville event that happened last week and how awful it was, and how everyone now is the topic is sort of about Confederate statues and should they be removed, and should they change the name of Faneuil Hall because Faneuil has a racist past. Same thing with Yawkey Way, and they're talking about changing the name of Yawkey Way. How do you feel about that, Lucien? Does it relate in any way to your work?
Well, there's the question of government speech versus First Amendment protected access to a free speech zone by people who privately donate monuments or whatever else. And I think there's a real legitimate question as to whether your government should be endorsing a Confederate monument. That I think is a legitimate question. I would hate to see this carry over into the private domain. I would hate to see people burning down Confederate museums or whatever else. I can see anybody of whatever political persuasion having an interest in seeing those types of items and not seeing them destroyed. And in even Nazi memorabilia or whatever else, having preservation for historical purposes. Who the fuck would have thought that we would have been dealing with people self-identifying as Nazis today? That's still something I have a difficult time wrapping my head around. But there still are historical relics related to that time, and I think they should be preserved. But as I said, that question of government speech, and do you want something in on public grounds, a Confederate memorial standing there? And then I think it is a legitimate question of, is this what the government is endorsing as an appropriate point of view? And then I think that's a legitimate question of whether it should be taken down or not, if it is antithetical to the liberal democratic values that we hold dear today. But I would like to see this go forward in a nonviolent legalistic direction. I really have a problem with this idea that we should all run out and punch Nazis. I mean, you have a militant group of people who feel validated by getting punched in the face. You have the type of white trash, shitheaded thugs who will go out to bars looking for a fucking fight. You don't go out and punch them. It gives them a good time. You know, if anything, I really wish everybody who would show up to counter-protest the Nazis and the KKK tomorrow, they should be met with mockery and ridicule. In an ideal setting, you would have the KKK marching and you would have the counter-protesters dressed like them, but with the false buck teeth and playing banjos and imitating sodomy with their cousins and everything else, and everybody just laughing their asses off at them. Because nothing will make them wither away more than that. If you go out and you give them the fight that they knew they were going to get and they thought they were looking for, and the one that makes them feel like they're really achieving something, then it's a degenerative spiral. It's a degenerative spiral of violence and dysfunction. And I fear we're kind of already irreparably on that course right now, but I hope not. But if the message was, look at you fragile, pathetic little shits. I mean, they can't. You can't just walk away from that. If you get punched in the face and you get back up again, they're going to feel very energized. Everybody's laughing at them as they should be.
Yeah,
that is far more difficult to recover from. And if you read Steven Pinker's book, The Better Angels of Our Nature, I feel like that's one of the best books of modern times. He was talking about the death of dueling. And how dueling really died out when everybody started laughing at it. Everybody started making a mockery of it.
Right. Well, right. That's an interesting exercise if you were to look back at all of these like antiquated things that have happened over history, and when they start becoming a mockery, then they start
dueling
out.
For a long time was a practice that people objected against. People were very upset, you know. People were going out and they were getting killed in these duels, you know, based on honor or whatever else. And according to history, it wasn't until the younger generation just started laughing and doing mock duels themselves that the dueling practice became untenable thereafter.
One last question I had for you, and that coming from that point, is like so many people would believe in a lot of the things you're saying, but when they first hear the Satanic Temple, they're turned off. Have you ever, like, why would you choose to have the name Satan behind, you know, what you're doing, where you could just come up with some, you know, generic, less offensive name to the average person, and they may support you?
But we couldn't, because it also means something to us. It's not something we could sit and deliberate and say, well, we're going to make up a different deity, because we grew up in the Judeo-Christian culture, and to us, Satan is the icon of rebellion against these kinds of norms, this kind of mythic backdrop that says that there's one right way to live your life, and this is what it is. The backdrop that says there's an ultimate power that's offended by your sexuality or whatever else. To us, since we were growing up, what we've embraced has been Satan. and to call it something else would be untrue to ourselves.
Interesting.
Well, thank you very much, everybody, for joining us here tonight.
I just have one quick question for Lucy, and I know that Tim was particularly terrified to be here this evening. I just want you to just assure him that you did not steal his soul during this.
No, I'm going to kill him.
Oh.
you're such a conflicted guy. You showed up with a guy named Ash who looks like a typical Satanist. Then you have a Harvard professor with you. So I at the end of this whole discussion, I don't know what to do.
We're everywhere. Yeah. You can't escape.
Well, thank you, Lucy, and thank you, Jordan, for coming all the way from Canada to be here. And thank you to everybody out there for joining us here tonight. We will be trying to do another one of these soon.
I'd like to thank everyone who joined us at the event. It was a massive pleasure to see so many of you show up and an honor to shake hands and take pictures with so many of you. I'd like to give a special thank you to our guest, Lucien. Regardless of what people think about his political or religious beliefs, he's a fascinating guy who is doing more to protect our personal freedoms than anyone I know. On behalf of myself, my family, and the many minorities that feel they've been pushed around, thank you, Lucien, for all you do.
And hail Satan.
For any listeners who'd like to hear more about Lucien or the Satanic Temple, you can find them at thesatanictemple.com. I'd also encourage you all to follow along with Tim and Lance on their shows Missing Maura Murray and Crawl Space. With that, we will conclude this episode of the Nighttime Podcast. If you're interested in hearing more content, please check out the Nighttime Patron Group, where for $1 a month, you can support the show and access the supporter-exclusive bonus content. You can join by visiting patreon.com/nighttimepodcast. On behalf of myself and the show's listeners, I'd like to thank the continued support of the current patrons and welcome the newest members to the group. Kevin, Mr. Eastwood, Jacob the Drummer, Mall to Bella, and Janine. Without you all, the production of the show would be impossible. And for anyone else who'd like to support the show but is unable to do so financially, you can help by telling your friends about me and leaving a positive review for Nighttime on Apple Podcasts or whichever equivalent you use. I was proud when I received this recent 5-star review from Jessica G-P. She said, "I've been listening since the beginning. Nighttime is a great show with a perfectly curated variety of subject matter. If you like Unsolved Mysteries and its variety, then you'll love this show." Thank you, Jessica. Now, to stay up to date, follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I use the handle @NighttimePod. And if you have any story ideas or feedback from the show, I'd love to hear from you at nighttimepodcast@gmail.com. Until then, keep looking around and let me know if you see anything weird.
The Nighttime Podcast is written, hosted, and produced by Jordan Bonaparte. Copyright Jordan Bonaparte.